You have a booming voice.
Has anybody had a chance to look at the minutes from April 3rd? Anybody want to move the minutes? Representative Cornish moves the minutes from April 3rd. Are there any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Minutes are adopted. And we're going to start with House File 80. Representative Hillstrom moves House File 80 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Rules. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Members, this is the debt buyer bill that we actually heard earlier in session. It passed out of this committee. It went to many other committees. And it's back here because we have an A1 amendment that we'd like to put on the bill. So, Madam Chair, I would move the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape that I would like it.
Representative Hillstrom moves the A1 amendment. Do you want to explain your amendment?
If we could just get it in the shape I'd like it, then I'll explain everything.
All those in favor of adopting the A1 amendment to get the bill in the form the author prefers, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Members, this is the debt buyer bill, and I want you to all remember that this really is to make certain that when people buy debt and then they get default judgments, that they make certain that they have the right person who owes the debt, the person who is asking for the default judgment has a right to the debt, and that we have the correct amount of debt. Members, this has been through many stops, as you can see at the top of the bill. And really what this does is it makes certain that we make it clear that every single default judgment doesn't have to have a hearing, and it makes more clarification on the itemization requirement. This is really to get folks who had some concern with the bill some comfort that, in fact, we did not mean for every single default judgment to have a hearing in court. And with that, I would stand for questions from members. I have a testifier in the event we have questions on the bill, Madam Chair, but we already did hear this bill and pass it out.
Are there questions from members? Seeing none, Representative Hillstrom renews her motion that HF 80 as amended be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Rules. All those in favor signify by...
There is another test.
Oh, I'm sorry. Are there people here to testify on the bill?
Yes.
I'm sorry. Mr. Carlson, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Joel Carlson, I'm here on behalf of a group called the Minnesota Creditors Rights Association, which is an association of about 50 lawyers that do collection work in our courts. And we don't have concerns about the thrust of this bill. I do have some concerns about the amendment that went on, and would like to at least continue to work with the author to address them, but requiring a creditor to prove that the statement or summons were served on the debtor in a conciliation court action is extremely difficult because the creditor is not responsible for sending that out. Any amount that is under $2,500 is sent out by the court. And so on the amendment where we're asking now the creditor to prove that the court sent that notice out is going to be very difficult. And I don't think that is the intent here. If it is over $2,500, then that has to be served by certified mail under Rule 508 of the Minnesota Rules of Practice. And so that is already going out by certified mail if it's over $2,500. And to give you an idea of the window here, the only cases in conciliation court that we're talking about would be those that are more than $2,500 and less than $4,000, because anything over $4,000 is not for a consumer debt is not accessible in conciliation court. Those have to be filed in district court. So we're talking about a very small window of cases here where the creditor actually already provides the proof of the service, and the language for those that are under $2,500 is I think an impossibility for the creditor, because I don't know how we're going to prove that the court did their job. Our other issues, we've had several meetings with the Attorney General and the author and the courts on this. Our only other issue significant issue with the bill is on lines 1.14 and 1.15, the use of the term admissible. And I know we're trying to clarify that, that a default judgment would not require a court hearing, but our concern is that by using the word admissible in this language, that, and want to make a record of it, that we're not, it's not where we're going, but under Minnesota rule of practice, the judge is the only person that can admit evidence. And that has been affirmed in our courts. They can't delegate that authority. And so we're concerned that by using the word admissible in this language, that court administration would be unable to grant an administrative default when they occur because they cannot admit evidence. I think we're on the same page of getting to there, but we don't have the right word yet that gives us comfort that court administration can continue to do administrative defaults. The consequence of that would be about 15,000 additional court hearings that don't go on today. So we want to make sure we get the language right. Madam Chair, those were my only comments, and I do appreciate the lengthy amount of time that Representative Hillstrom has spent on this issue to try and get the language correct. So thank you.
Are there questions from members? Is there anyone else in the audience that wants to be heard on the bill? Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Members, we have been changing this language, trying to make sure we get it right, because ultimately, if we don't get it right, the court puts a big fiscal note on it, and that is not our intention. Our intention is to make certain that those who are getting default judgments actually are entitled to the money, and they have the right person, and they have the right amount of debt. We want to make certain that as we raise the limit for conciliation court, that these debt buyer cases didn't just become going to conciliation court with that higher amount without having some of these same standards in place. That was the reason for the amendment, and I am certain we can work out the notice provision of cases around $2,500. I'm confident we can work that out.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Hillstrom renews her motion that House File 80, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Rules. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, motion prevails.
Thank you.
And Representative Hillstrom now moves that House File 1160 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Hillstrom, do you want to go to the author's amendments first?
Yes, I first need to move the DE amendment.
Representative Hillstrom moves the DE14 amendment. All those, Representative Hillstrom.
If I could just check, I believe it's the DE5 amendment. Is that the one that's in my packet?
It's the DE14 amendment.
Okay, then I would move the DE14 amendment.
All those in favor of adopting the DE14 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would prefer, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed, amendment is adopted. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I first would like to actually go through the DE14 amendment just to make certain folks know what it is. Then I do have, I believe, two other author amendments, unless, Madam Chair, you'd like me to speak to those other amendments to get the bill in the shape I would like it completely.
Representative Hillstrom, whichever you prefer.
So, members, let me just start then by going through the other amendments, because one of them does in fact move some money. So if I might just ask which, maybe if I go through the A4 amendment, Madam Chair.
Representative Hillstrom moves the A4 amendment.
Yes, so members, the A4 amendment is the Guardians and Conservator bill that I have been working on all session. Members, I was not going to put this provision in the omnibus bill. However, I found out last week after I presented my omnibus bill that the court had put a fiscal cost on this bill. So the only way I can pass the change in this provision is if I put it in my omnibus bill and pay for it. So at this point, I do have some testifiers who certainly can talk about what this bill does, but members, basically what this issue does is it says that when people want to be a guardian or a conservator, the court has the need to see additional information. And so this has, they currently go through a background check. This makes that more frequent, and it also includes any professional licenses that you might have. It doesn't disqualify folks from being a guardian or a conservator, but it actually says that the court needs to have this information. And so that is the A4 amendment. This bill was originally brought to me by the Attorney General's office, and as you can see on line 1.3, there is a fiscal cost that goes along with this bill. This actually pays for the pieces for the Department of Human Services in the increased background check, expanded background check, by increasing the fee that's paid for that background check. And with that, I would stand for questions.
Are there questions on the A4 amendment? All those in favor of adopting the A4 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, the amendment is adopted. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you. And the last amendment that I have is which number?
A5.
Members, the A5 amendment was brought to me, the language was brought to me by the court. Currently, the criminal traffic surcharge, the language that I had put in the bill basically said on convictions, and under current statute, they can already put it on other kinds of dispositions, and so this really just changes the language from convictions to dispositions. This doesn't change the policy. It doesn't put it on any additional items that aren't currently in law, but this is to just make certain that this bill matches with current practice of the court. And I would ask for your support of the A5 amendment.
Are there any questions on the A5 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A5 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, amendment is adopted. Representative Hillstrom, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Members, so this is the omnibus judiciary bill. We did do a walkthrough of this bill previously, so I don't want to, you know, re-walk through the entire bill. I just really wanted to highlight some of the items that we have that are different than the governor's budget bill. Members, we added now the guardian and conservators language. We only have a 3% and 3% percent raises for judges, not the 4% and 4%. We do not have the pension piece in our bill that is carried in the omnibus pension bill. We have added Representative Moline's bill, who takes care of judges, for some housing and mileage reimbursement for folks who live in greater Minnesota. We have added some additional finances for specialty courts. We have added additional items for the public defenders to take care of the money that they will be losing with the $75 expiration of the $75 fee on attorney registration. We added some rider language to pay the outstanding court reporter costs. We also added a 1% increase to current staff employees that were not the public defenders or the courts to take care of salary insurance costs. That does not count the agencies that are simply passed through. Members, if you have specific questions in the bill, I'm happy to answer those. But other than that, this really is much of the governor's proposal with our additional added spending priorities. It also has the court technology fee that goes to fund technology for the partners as the courts implement e-filing and e-discovery. The way that we pay for these provisions, as we did not get the entire amount in our target, was from the bond reinstatement fee, which was House File 744, an increase in the criminal traffic surcharge, and the graduated conciliation court fees, along with the technology fee. And with that, members, I would stand for questions.
Members, are there questions at this time? We do have a couple more amendments that I think we'll take up after questions, and then after the other amendments, we'll go to public testimony. So are there questions at this time? Seeing none. Oh, Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Hillstrom, I noticed that you have increase in the fees on traffic, mostly the traffic citations. Have you talked to law enforcement, see how they feel about this and how they'll deal with the public when they hear the outcry of the increased fines? And as I said, I noticed that Jim Franklin is here. I was wondering if he'd be able to answer that if possible.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Johnson, nobody ever likes to increase fees. But in order to fund the priorities of this committee, we needed to find some additional money. I have had a few conversations, and I am confident that if they would like to testify on the bill, they would do that. And you can hear from them if they have concerns.
Are there any other questions from members? Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hillstrom, just if you could review some of these areas. We have an 1% increase for tax court, for judicial standards board sentencing guidelines. That wasn't in the governor's request, and we didn't have anybody come here to testify for it. From these agencies that I'm aware of, even asking for it, why are we actually putting more in the bill than was even asked for?
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Drazkowski. Many folks made recommendations or requests to the governor that were not fully funded. This is really to take care of some staffing and insurance issues that they're all going to have. And so I am confident that if they testified, they would be testifying in favor of getting the additional funding to take care of their increased salary and insurance costs.
Representative Drazkowski.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hillstrom, I would be confident that anybody who was in an agency that came and was going to receive more money, that they would be glad to receive that as well. But it's unfortunate that we didn't hear from those people if indeed they did have the ability to demonstrate that need. It's unfortunate that they weren't before the committee, if that's the case. And just at least on the surface, I think the members of the committee and the taxpayers need to say why, and maybe why to the overall size of the bill and the increase as well. Anyway, we'll have maybe some more comments at the end. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Drazkowski, I think you will recall that many of the presentations that came before us over and over again said they had made a higher request to the governor and they did not get everything that they requested or needed. So many of the presentations that we heard did in fact say that.
Any other questions from members? Seeing none, we'll go to the other amendments. Representative Drazkowski, do you want to move the DE-15 amendment?
Madam Chair, I think we're looking at maybe the A1 or A2 first. I'd move the A2, Madam Chair.
Representative Drazkowski moves the A2 amendment. Representative Drazkowski, to your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this amendment changes the way that the court technology fund is handled. The court technology fee, I should say. The way that the bill is drafted, the court technology fee is actually written into statute. It's codified into statute, which means that that is going to become part of the base budget onward into the future without the level of scrutiny that might happen if we had, if we have it written the way that this amendment does, and this amendment, members, is written, I believe Representative Hillstrom had a bill, her original bill had this same language, and I'd be interested in Representative Hillstrom's comments on it. But what this would do is that it would provide that this language appeared in session law would require us 2 years from now to come back, visit, evaluate with the courts and the respective entities that are using this technology fee to make certain that things are on track, that the need is still there, et cetera. So that's part of it. It also takes and removes some of the language. I've got to find that in the bill. I don't know if the courts, I'd be interested to hear from the courts if they think we actually in the bill direct the courts. Thank you. It's members on page 4, lines 4.28 and 9, we actually tell the courts that application for the expenditure of technology funds shall be accepted from judicial districts, county attorneys, and city attorney's offices, Board of Public Defense, qualified legal services programs, and so we tell them shall. I'm not a constitutional attorney, but for us to tell the courts that they have to, I think appears problematic. So this removes that conflict from this part, and it replaces that prescriptive language with again the language that we had, and I don't have the amendment. Yeah, it was in House File 1398. So I'd appreciate your support for the amendment, and stand for any questions, Madam Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Members, one of the reasons why this technology fee is ongoing is we learned that just this biennium alone, the public defenders will need more than $2.5 million to comply or to be able to accommodate the technology needs from e-filing and e-discovery. And that's just in this biennium. It's my understanding that they will continue to have increased technology needs as e-filing and e-discovery is implemented across the state. Currently, that is done in 7 counties, and ultimately we have 87 counties that need to be done, and that's just one area. That doesn't count corrections needs to file their PSI, pre-sentence investigations, electronically. That doesn't take care of any of the other agencies that deal with the court or pro se defendants. And so I think that if we as a state are going to require e-filing and e-discovery, that we have an obligation to make sure that the technology is available to the people on the other side to make certain that they have, the other side of the table, to make sure that they have access to justice as well. We know that, in, for example, in divorce cases, many of the people who appear are pro se. And I think it's this committee's responsibility to provide the technology for the people using the court system as well. And so I would ask members to not support the A2 amendment. And I've had conversations with Representative Drazkowski. I would have preferred that this just be a straight appropriation as well, but that's not where we are. And so if we're going to have ongoing technology needs, I think that it's important that we have an ongoing technology fund.
Are there questions from members on the DE1, or I'm sorry, the A2 amendment?
Madam Chair.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one more thing. I did look back into the notes from the courts as they were presenting our the technology plan, and they did expect full implementation in 12 to 18 months from the time that they testified here, which would mean, you know, a year from now we could have full implementation of their plan. I don't know what that means for the public defenders, Madam Chair, and the other elements, but I think it's fair to say that the bulk of the plan will be done a year from now, and may be done at the end of the next fiscal year. So I think the amendment's fair, and I'd encourage you to adopt it.
Are there any other questions from members on the A2 amendment? Any further discussion? All those in favor of adopting the A2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed?
No.
No. Amendment is not adopted. Representative Scott moves the A1 amendment. Representative Scott, to your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No offense to the sitting chair there, but this amendment is to remove your provision in the omnibus bill. This request for mileage reimbursement and housing for the Court of Appeals was not something that was requested and was not supported by the court system. It creates a disproportionate Court of Appeals judges' salaries. And unlike legislators who are citizen representatives of a given district, Court of Appeals judges are appointed from a congressional district and they are paid full-time employees of the statewide court. And rationale that it's difficult to recruit out-state applicants doesn't really apply here. A good number of well-qualified attorneys and judges apply to the Court of Appeals. Also, I have a concern with the way that it's written, that it would cause judges currently residing in the metro to consider moving their residence to an out-state location, and then they could also be reimbursed for mileage and housing. And it might open the door to other officials with a statewide jurisdiction, such as the public utilities commissioners and those sorts of things, also wanting the same allowances. So for those reasons, I'm offering it the A1 amendment and ask for your support.
Thank you. And members, I would ask you to oppose the A1 amendment. Currently, there are 19 judges on the Court of Appeals. One from each of our 8 congressional districts and 11 at-large judges. The idea of requiring one from each congressional district is to make sure that we have geographic diversity on the Court of Appeals. And although there are 19 judges on the Court of Appeals, from my understanding right now, there's only 4 from outside of the metro area. Moorhead, Owatonna, Walker, New Ulm, 5, and 1 north of Duluth. And so my proposal is simply the same as what legislators get. If we live more than 50 miles from St. Paul, we're awarded housing and mileage to be here in St. Paul working. And it simply affords that same opportunity for judges who live in greater Minnesota. I think it's a matter of fairness, and it's also a matter of making sure that we do have geographic diversity on the Court of Appeals. And although judges are typically appointed first, they are required to run for re-election during the next general election cycle. And when they run for re-election, you know, the people of Minnesota elect judges from Moorhead and Walker. And I think that it's fair that we don't expect those people to have to maintain homes in their home districts as well as an apartment in St. Paul. So it's simply to bring fairness to the Court of Appeals. The same, you know, there's members on both sides of the aisle here on this committee that live more than 50 miles away from St. Paul, and we take that housing and mileage, and it's just to allow the same opportunity for judges. So I would ask you to vote against the A1 amendment. Are there any other questions from members? Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So in the case of someone that now lives in the metro, a judge that's now on the Court of Appeals, lives in the metro, and decides that they want to live full-time at their lake place, and they want to sell their home here, and they want to live full-time at their lake place in Walker, Minnesota, so we would then have to pay mileage and housing for them, even though currently they reside here. And
Representative Scott, the judge who is from Walker was a district court judge in Walker, and he's always lived in Walker, and now he serves on the Court of Appeals. The intent of this legislation is certainly not to allow for judges to move to parts of the state outside of the metro area and have their housing compensated. That's not the intent of this legislation. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair, but nothing in this legislation would stop that from happening. So I would just encourage a support of the amendment. Thank you.
Are there any other questions from members? All those in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Amendment is not adopted. Representative Drazkowski moves the DE15 amendment. Representative Drazkowski, to your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this amendment removes the fees and lowers the appropriation in the areas of, I think there's a spreadsheet that either went around or should be coming around. I don't know if staff passed it out yet. Yep, it is. Okay. reduces the main core operations section of the courts on the top of page one of the spreadsheet. And then if you go to page two of the spreadsheet, it reduces that core justice operations there on the Court of Appeals, the district courts, and the guardian ad litem board. And then lastly, reduces the workloads and staffing section under the district public defense funding on page three of the spreadsheet. But members, this gets rid of all of the fees and accomplishes everything with an increase. The overall increase for the budget category would go from 7% over 12-13 actual down to 5% increase over 12-13 actual. Still an increase, I think, for the majority that is too much. For some of us, much too much. One that is still an increase, and I'd encourage you to accept this amendment, one that will prevent people who are entering into our courts from being burdened with additional fees. So encourage your support of the amendment.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Members, this really does gut many of the priorities that were added in the governor's budget, as well as additional priorities that we have placed in the bill. I know that raising fees is never a popular thing to do, but I think that funding our priorities is important to do here. And so I would ask that folks not vote to remove the fees and not make these funding adjustments to the bill.
Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Draskowski, when the chair brought this idea to me, I think she remembers that I cringed. I don't like these fees either. I have distinct recollection of previous times we raised fees. But these fees are your party's legacy. They're the result of a no new taxes policy that has been in place since I started in the legislature. In an area of the legislature, the judiciary and public safety, that historically both parties have agreed on. But no, there's not been enough to go around. In Tim Pawlenty's second term, I remember him holding up, this must have been a last day right before the State of the State speech thing, but he held up in the State of the State speech his taxpayer protection pen. And he held up a blue felt tip pen, and he waved it around and said, this is going to protect the taxpayers of Minnesota. And that year, the year after, and every year thereafter that he was governor, our taxes went up. They went up, local property taxes, the fees went up, all these went up. Both parties have raised fees. This is a bad legacy. We have differences of opinion about how we need to raise revenue around here. This may be a bad way to do it, but I look out in the audience there, and I see public defenders, and I see other people from the courts, and I see folks that are representing areas of this state that where people are relying on us. The people of Minnesota are absolutely relying on us. And I think it was a responsible thing for Chair Hillstrom to do, albeit distasteful, but nowhere near as distasteful as the dereliction of duty that we have seen in the state of Minnesota for the past 10 years. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Cornish.
Well, Madam Chair, members, I was going to be quiet until you spouted off like that, but like you say, both parties can take a little bit of the blame here, but I think you're going to start a new legacy of overspending even when people don't ask for it, so congratulations, that's all.
Any other questions? Representative Portman.
Thank you. I disagree with Representative Lesh to some extent. There were definitely things I did not like about Governor Pawlenty, and when he cut local government aid and then pretended that property tax increases weren't his fault, I didn't like that, and I criticized him about that. But one thing I did agree with him on was in the health impact fee, where he dedicated the revenue to health care because cigarettes weren't paying their way in Minnesota, and we knew it. We had good data on that. And in the area of the justice system, he increased fees on users of this system. And I think people who use government systems more than others should, in appropriate circumstances, pay user fees to account for the fact that they use the system more than others. I think when we look at raising revenue fairly, Having some fees in some situations that burden the users of the system is entirely appropriate, and I agree with the choices that the chair has made.
Are there any other questions, Representative Drazkowski?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, members, I just need, you know, to go over the numbers. I mean, we're starting off at a target that is $30 million above the base for this biennium that we're looking at. On top of that, there's an additional $17.25 million in general fund and $5.6 million in special revenue fund fees for a total of $52.85 million above the base. So this is a huge, as Representative Cornish was mentioning, this is a huge increase in spending, and that's the issue here. All we're doing is saying, let's not do the spending that comes with the additional fees. Give Minnesotans the ability to continue at the same fee levels they're at, the same court tax levels you're at, if we would inject rhetoric, Representative Lesh. That's really what we're looking for here, and I think it's fair. It's one that still provides, as I mentioned, a full 5% increase to the budget area. I think in this, nearly every area gets increases, significant increases across the biennium, which, I mean, if one of our members were chair, I think they'd be much, the fees would not be as high as the 5%. It's one I think that it works, and encourage your support.
Are there any other questions from members on the DE-1-5 amendment? Representative Drazkowski.
Madam Chair, just ask for a roll call on the amendment.
Representative Drazkowski requests a roll call. Representative Paymar.
Madam Chair, I'm one who actually I don't agree with what Representative Drazkowski, where he's taken the money from if he was going to end the fees. But I just want to add my voice of concern about the continued increases in fees. And I don't share Representative Portman's perception that all these are connected to the criminal justice system, and that they will do no harm, especially to low-income people who use the system. And if you look at the kinds of fees and fines that happen to people who get caught up in the criminal justice system, it's sometimes very, very difficult for them to extricate themselves from problems that they have gotten themselves into, and we keep piling it on and piling it on. And I have always said that that the judiciary and public safety are core functions of government, and they should be paid as such. And when you get dealt a bad hand, then you got to question where the hand got dealt from. And I don't like this. And if Representative Drazkowski would have been a little bit more creative, I might have joined in supporting him, but I won't.
Are there any other questions from members? The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Hillstrom?
No.
Representative Moline?
No.
Representative Drazkowski?
Yes.
Representative Bly?
No.
Representative Cornish?
Yes.
Representative Portman? Representative Johnson B?
Yes.
Representative Johnson S?
No.
Representative Lesh?
No.
Representative Lean?
Nay.
Representative McNamer?
No.
Representative O'Neill?
Yes.
Representative Paymar?
No.
Representative Pugh?
Yes.
Representative Scott?
There being 6 ayes and 9 nays, the amendment is not adopted. We'll go to public testimony at this time. Is there anyone here that would like to be heard on the bill? I have Kelly Madden from the state. State Public Defender's Office signed up if that person wants to come down. Ms. Madden, do you want to start since you were on the list?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kelly Madden. I'm a public defender. I've been a public defender for 18 years in Anoka Counties, Washington Counties, and Hennepin County, where I currently work. I'm also a member of Teamsters Local 320. The state public defense employees support the budget increases to the Board of Public Defense budget. We represent what many people refer to as, I guess, the undesirables of society, people who I find to be maybe born to the wrong families, have had difficult circumstances in their life, and people who I find to be, who I'm really proud to represent. What I've seen over the course of 18 years is an increase in penalties, the much more serious penalties, much more complex litigation, DNA, fingerprint, scientific evidence, and what we're seeing is we're seeing a younger workforce because we have a revolving door on public defense employees. I've been around for 18 years, and I'm probably one of the most senior state employees in the state of Minnesota as an attorney. In my office at one time, we had 54 state employees, 27 who had left to find greener pastures within 3 to 5 years of being hired. When they're hired, they're told, here's a pay scale, but that pay scale is illusory. I'm at a step 11. In August, I should be at step 19, and I'm not even close to being there. It's they're not told that when they're hired, and then they realize that we're treated like the red-haired stepchild by public and by other people, and that the resources are given to public defense, unfortunately. And I know it's been a difficult economic time. We took 0-0 for those years when the budgets were really bad, and I know the state of the economy is bad, but what we need is we need lawyers who are experienced, because experienced lawyers make a more efficient judicial system. We know the players. We don't have to be trained in. We know the judges and the prosecutors. We can walk into any courtroom in our jurisdiction and get stuff done in a much quicker and more efficient manner than those who aren't experienced and aren't aware of the players, the local rules, etc. It's really become a specialized practice in a lot of ways. We have specialty courts where you have county attorneys who maybe focus on one thing. We're doing it all. We have lawyers. These are lawyers who have chosen to do this job. We have Harvard-educated lawyers, Columbia, New York University. These aren't people who fell into the profession. We're there because we're committed to representing these people and to upholding the Constitution and to, and you know, that cocktail hour question, why do you represent these people? How can you? I do it because it's the right thing to do. I'm committed to do it. And they're not always guilty of what they've been charged. I mean, there are people who are actually innocent, and there are people who have been overcharged and other things along those lines. We have lawyers with debt, lawyers who have 2 and 3 jobs. I was working 2 jobs for, I think, the first 10 years of my career, running from public defense to Dayton's at Southdale, where I worked a second job 20 hours a week. We're working in courtrooms where probation officers and county attorneys are making significantly more than us. And so we're asking that we be funded to a level where we can represent these people, we can retain people, and we don't have this revolving door, and that maybe someday everybody in our office will have 18 to 20 years of experience and can try that first-degree murder. You're not going to put a first-year surgeon who hasn't gone through residency doing brain surgery, and you can't take a first-year lawyer and have them do felonies, and have them do crim sexes, and have them do murders. And so we have concerns about how the budget will be spent, that we really need to have it spent on retention. And most of the lawyers, if not all the lawyers, it's very impossible to find a general consensus among public defenders. But the one thing I think you'll find an overall consensus about is we would rather have an increase in workload but be paid equitably, because we've suffered for the last few years given the economy, and we do understand that, but we need to retain our lawyers.
Are there questions from members for Ms. Madden? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. Mr. Carlson, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I have the pleasure of representing a number of groups in the legal profession, and one of those groups is the Association of Professional Court Reporters. And I wanted to put on the record and thank the chair for, in the DE-5 amendment, not only the increase in the public defense budget, but specifically requiring that the transcripts that court reporters are obligated to prepare will be paid and promptly paid. We have court reporters now that are preparing transcripts that the backlog is somewhere around 8 months for getting paid for the work that they perform, and that's not the fault of the public defender, it's the fault of the budget that they have. But the language in the bill, and I think not moving that away from a separate line item, which it has been in the past, is a step forward, and we greatly appreciate it. It is just unfair to those employees that do the work to submit that bill and get a letter from the public defender that says we'll pay you when the next fiscal year rolls around. And so we appreciate the committee approving that recommendation. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I did contact Charlotte and let her know I was going to be here. So.
Are there questions from members for Mr. Carlson? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Carlson. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to be heard on the bill? If so, please come forward. Seeing none, are there questions from members for Chair Hillstrom? Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I should have asked Mr. Carlson, maybe it's not a question, but I'm surprised there's an Association of Court Reporters. I learned there's an Association of Law Librarians. I'm floored. If I was them, I'd use their association fees somewhat differently, Madam Chair. Anyway, members, I'd encourage a no vote on the bill. I think it's. This is an example of the excessive spending that we're going to be seeing through all the budget areas. We offered an amendment to at least bring away the fees. We've got three areas that actually didn't ask for the increases. We're giving them, at least not that I have heard, and I don't remember it coming before committee. We have to remember who's paying the bill here, and the state of Minnesota, the workers in Minnesota, are going to. Apparently be forced to pay taxes in greater amounts and in new and improved ways, apparently, Madam Chair, in order to pay for this very significant increase in spending of about 7% from biennium to biennium. So I'd encourage a no vote. Thank you.
Are there any other questions from members? Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair, just have a little bit of comment here. I do have some issues with this budget bill. I do feel that the funds on line 160 are not going to materialize. Having been one to issue the citations over the past 27 years, I remember when people complained when all the fees and everything on a stop sign ticket went to $50. Now, this simple seatbelt ticket that we have is, by statute, is a $25 fine. With these increases in these the surcharges, we're looking at close to $150 for a seatbelt ticket. That's five times what our statute says the fine can be. My constituents would go crazy. They go crazy when we did issue the citations because the fines were so high. In fact, it's got to a point where a number of communities have started issuing administrative citations where they don't have to, they bypass the court system altogether. A number of communities have taken the 169 statutes and put them into their ordinance and issue it as an ordinance violation, keeping those fines back down to the $25 to $50 range, and the court system's not getting a dime on these surcharges. There's going to be more of that happening because the public will not put up with these high fees. They don't have a problem paying the ticket, and if they do get the state-issued citation, they're going to take it to court. They're, again, log-jamming our court system, increasing our costs, and the funds that these surcharges are going to bring are going to be a lot less than what the forecast is at. From what I can see and what I've seen in the past working in this field. The public safety budget we heard earlier this morning, I felt that was bipartisan. In fact, Andrea Kiefer's bill was included in that, in the funding, making it much easier for all of us to go along with. However, this bill does not appear to be that way. In fact, every amendment that we tried to use to make it somewhat bipartisan was defeated. We have a responsibility to our constituents and all the taxpayers of Minnesota to put forth a responsible spending bill that is reasonable to all Minnesotans and to all Minnesota families. I know we were told what the target was at the beginning of this, and with these extra fees, it's $17 million on top of that. $17 million on this budget is a lot. I know I wish my family budget could be raised that easy just by telling the people around me that they have to give me the money. Unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. I have to live within my budget. I can't raise my budget. I don't have the authority to raise my budget. All the budgets for the state are going to go up dramatically. But I think it's just going to be the only way that we're going to be able to pay for this is take the money from the rest of the Minnesota families, and they don't have the money in their budget to do that.
Thank you. Representative Portman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank the chair of the committee for putting together what I think is a balanced bill. I know it's difficult to raise fees. I'll tell you, I was one of those people who got a speeding ticket and had that big hefty surcharge on there, and it was about 2008, and I looked at it and I said, that's a Tim Pawlenty tax, and I don't like it. But let me tell you something, I haven't gotten a speeding ticket since. And part of the reason I haven't gotten a speeding ticket since is because it was expensive. So there's a deterrent effect there, and it funds a system that then I needed. I went into the courtroom, and at that courthouse that day, there were public defenders at work. There were prosecutors at work. There were probation officers and judges, and there was a facility for me to go into to argue about my speeding ticket. And we have to maintain that system. It needs to be strong. And in order for it to work well, we need qualified people in that system. And if we keep not raising judges' pay and we keep ignoring the fact that public defenders are leaving for jobs where they can make more money, we're accepting the fact that the system's going downhill and it's not as efficient and it's not as good as it can be. And I think what the chair has recognized is we have an obligation to treat this co-equal branch of government fairly and take care of it. And yes, it's an increase over the previous biennial budget, but you have to look at the total picture for this area of the budget over the last 10 years and how many times it's suffered cuts. So it's not some big dramatic growth or increase. It's about kind of trying to take care of a system that's really languishing right now. And I think the chair has done a good job of listening to the parties that have come forward and testified about the work that they do and the workload that they have. And I don't think any of her increases she's put in this bill are wildly outrageous. I mean, I really would have personally liked to see some bigger investment in the public defenders and legal aid, because having those staff in the courtroom make the whole system work better for the rest of us. So I'd like to compliment the chair on a good bill, a balanced bill, and I think a moderate bill in the face of financial circumstances.
Are there any other questions from members? Any other discussion to the bill? Representative Hillstrom?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before I make my closing statement, I just really want to thank the committee staff as well as nonpartisan staff for all of the hard work that everyone has put into helping put together this bill. It is never easy to put together these bills, and we rely on their expertise. And I want to thank all of you for all of your hard work. We also have a committee page who's been around helping us, who has helped us through this process, and as well as DFL research and GOP research. We have, I believe, worked together in a bipartisan fashion, although Representative Johnson, you don't think that the bill is bipartisan. I think that this committee worked in a very bipartisan fashion. So with that, members, I believe that this is a bill that really will assist our third branch of government in taking care of the needs of Minnesotans. We have an obligation to make certain that the people have access to justice, and I believe that this bill does that, and I would ask for member support.
Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. Representative Hillstrom renews her motion that House File 1160 be recommended to pass as amended and be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you, members.
Thank you, members, and we are adjourned.